This video is sponsored by World Anvil. They're too friendly to be the loner in this story, but they'll totally help you write one. Some heroes lead armies, some heroes find families, and some heroes just want to be left alone. The loner archetype is a popular character format, a self-reliant character who typically works alone, travels alone, and prefers to be alone under most circumstances. That said, surprisingly, loners aren't usually actually alone. Many loners have allies, friends, families, they occasionally join teams, and a surprising number of them adopt kids. Well, how can they be a loner if they're not actually alone? Well, loner isn't technically synonymous with a lone person. A loner is officially defined as someone who either avoids or does not seek out other people. So whatever the reason, they don't really go looking for friends or allies, but it's not really their business if friends and allies find them anyway. But this feels like kind of a cop-out, right? What kind of a lame loner in name only isn't actually alone? Why do we have to jump through all these technical hoops to explain why the loner isn't actually working alone? Well, it's because most stories thrive on character interactions. If your character is a loner with company, they can still have all kinds of interesting dynamics with other more sociable characters. But if your character is actually alone, then the story has to rely on their individual character being compelling enough to carry the narrative. So even if you have a loner character who'd prefer to be alone and would theoretically work very well alone, most stories don't let them stay alone, because narratively that is much less interesting than an ensemble cast. This can make it kind of hard to convince the audience that this character is actually a loner. Doesn't matter how many times your gruff badass says, "I work alone," if their actions don't reflect that sentiment. But in some ways, loner is more of a personality trait than a matter of circumstance. Many alone characters aren't loners and don't work very well by themselves, and many characters in groups can still come across as loners if they don't feel particularly reliant on that group. There's all kinds of reasons a loner can end up in company. Many loners are initially helped or rescued by other characters who then stick around to make sure they don't hurt themselves. Most loners are too dang heroic to leave a child unattended, and a lot of loners pick up tag-along protagonists who just like being around them. It's not about being alone, it's about feeling alone. Which is probably the most depressing way I could have phrased that. Anyway, loners come in a lot of different flavors, but there's a few major subcategories that strongly define what kind of story the loner fits in. First off is the lone wanderer, a loner who wanders the world. Without a home or a base of operations, they drift from one set piece to the next, following their own internal logic or creed, and occasionally meddling when their sense of justice demands it. This archetype was codified in Akira Kurosawa's films Yojimbo and Sanjuro, starring Toshiro Mifune as a nameless wandering ronin who keeps accidentally stumbling into gang wars and political intrigue and saving the day before wandering off into the sunset. This character and story format were later adopted into the spaghetti western A Fistful of Dollars, where Clint Eastwood plays a nameless wandering gunslinger who keeps accidentally stumbling into gang wars in the lawless Wild West and saving the day before riding off into the sunset. The popularity of this nameless wandering hero archetype was pretty much inevitable thanks to the combined charisma of these two characters, and nowadays it's a fairly common narrative staple. These characters are often explicitly nameless or are strongly implied to be working under a pseudonym and have a habit of vanishing out of the story once their work is done. And while they typically find friends or allies wherever they go, they generally travel alone, and they don't pick up any long-term traveling companions, though there are some pretty major exceptions to this rule. This loner archetype works very well for episodic narratives in anthology series, where the loner is usually the one unifying theme between individual installments, because they can just kind of wander into any story or setting you want them to. Gang war, murder mystery, political shenanigans, full episode Shakespeare homage, etc. Similar to the lone wanderer, but not to be confused with them, is the lone traveler, a loner who also walks the world but has a very specific purpose in doing so. They might be a bounty hunter or mercenary looking for money, they might be a vigilante hunting down someone who's wronged them, they might just be questing after some personal MacGuffin. Where lone wanderers drift in and out of other people's stories, the lone traveler is more goal-oriented, and it's easier for the audience to follow their personal story more closely. And since these characters have more structured personal arcs, it's a lot easier for the narrative to give them supporting characters. It's not uncommon for them to have a mentor, and some of them even get traveling companions, usually ones they need to go out of their way to protect, like kids, squishy love interests, or non-combat support classes. Lone travelers have a coherent linear narrative they're following, and while they might stumble into fun set pieces in the same way the lone wanderer would, they generally maintain the continuity of their personal character arc in the process. Lone travelers are also more likely to have personal recurring antagonists. Similar to this character, but slightly inverted, is the loner who works alone. This is an important distinction, because unlike these last two types, they might have a team, a family, a very active social life, a home base, and/or a strong and stable support structure, but when stuff gets serious and they need to get stuff done, this character works alone. There's some pretty serious overlap between this archetype and the Lancer character, a member of a team who strikes out on their own a little more than they maybe should. These guys frequently do team-ups, but those team-ups are the exception rather than the rule. Maybe they find teamwork restrictive, or they think their allies don't have the stomach to do what needs to be done, or they just find people distracting and work best when we don't need to deal with that, or they've got a personal arc happening on the side, and whenever that pops up, they peel off from the group to handle it alone. Most characters in this category fall somewhere on the spectrum between Batman and Wolverine. Some of these characters were also alone for a very long time, usually due to some kind of traumatic event or ostracism. And during that period, they developed a very isolated and self-reliant worldview, and while they might have friends and allies now, they can't shake the fundamental idea that in the end, they can only rely on themselves. Although sometimes they eventually get their asses kicked enough that they decide teamwork is actually pretty cool. When these characters are Lancers, their hero foil is usually all about friendship and teamwork, and the loner Lancer typically scoffs a bit, but ultimately appreciates their optimistic perspective. But a lot of the time, these characters don't need fixing or anything. Their loner status is totally fine and healthy, and they work very well on their own. But sometimes, it seems like the loner is almost in denial about how not alone they actually are at this point. This produces the archetype acting alone, a loner with a team, a support network, a found family, friends, loved ones, and all the help in the world who still thinks of themselves as a cool, badass solo loner. These guys tend to be kind of insecure in their loner status. Unlike the previous archetypes, they're not loners because they prefer it that way or they do their best work like that. It's because they define themselves that way, often as a direct response to some kind of isolating event that made them alone in the first place. A loner who works alone sometimes has a similar isolating event in their backstory, but usually became really badass to compensate and now functions very well on their own. But for some loners, it's not a matter of skill, it's an ego thing. They internalized that they couldn't trust anybody, so they forged an identity around the idea that they wouldn't trust anybody. And since it's an ego thing, if they realize they are relying on people, it hurts their pride. Acting aloners sometimes lash out at the people they're closest to when they realize their vulnerability inherent in their relationship, or otherwise spiral into self-destructive behavior to preserve their self-image. I like to call this pulling a Vegeta because it makes people mad. Of course, it's not always that dire. Sometimes it just seems like the acting aloner doesn't really notice the disconnect between reality and their self-image as a cool loner who doesn't need anyone. But sometimes these characters will have a highly dramatic crisis of pride and run off to be cool and alone again until they get over themselves. Once again, very common with Lancers. And similarly dramatic is the archetype of the self-loathing loner, a loner whose isolation stems from their overwhelmingly terrible personal problems. Maybe they think they're too dangerous to be around, or unworthy of having friends, or they have to isolate themselves so they can rise to the top no matter what, or any number of other reasons. The bottom line is, these characters think they have to be alone, or otherwise force themselves to be alone, but they don't actually want to be alone. For these loners, acquiring friends and a supporting cast is a much more emotionally loaded affair than average. The self-loathing loner might keep the reason for their isolation a secret, or they might be pretty upfront about it, or it might just be the simple act of pushing people away once they get too close and start feeling vulnerable. But either way, they generally don't stay alone forever. Tenacious extroverted protagonists will attach themselves to them and eventually earn their trust and friendship, and the self-loathing loner will become significantly more emotionally healthy and usually evolve into one of the other loner archetypes over time. Or if the status quo is more important, like in many long-running comics, the self-loathing loner might be doomed to a life of isolation for as long as that narrative is profitable. This is known as the Hulk effect, by me and nobody else. Other unwilling loners include the loner on the run, a loner whose isolation stems from the fact that the system is out to get them. They might be a vigilante, an outlaw, framed for a crime they didn't commit, a typical YA protagonist, whatever the reason, the system they live in is trying to screw them over and they need to run, hide, and generally avoid dealing with it wherever they can. Sometimes overlaps with the lone wanderer. Interestingly, sometimes these guys will actually form groups and basically go on the run together, a case where the group functions as a self-reliant loner despite being composed of multiple people. This is surprisingly common in space-based shows like Firefly or Cowboy Bebop. Now, each loner archetype lends itself well to different kinds of stories. Lone wanderers and travelers lend themselves best to episodic narratives, especially anthology series where the loner can basically serve as a POV character through which we experience new settings and characters every adventure. Lone travelers and loners on the run lend themselves very well to long-form plots where the character is pursuing an external objective. The journey might take them through a series of new locations, but they're pretty goal-oriented and they don't usually lose sight of the main objective. And self-loathing loners, working aloners, and acting aloners lend themselves well to character arcs where we get to explore the nature of this loner and how they develop over time. Unsurprisingly, loners are very appealing targets for a very specific space of character arcs mostly centered on the concept of found family. Lots of characters become true companions after like one good bonding experience, but loners are a little more prickly and tend to be harder to bond with. This means when they do start bonding, it's a lot more rewarding because, at least theoretically, that dynamic is earned. Because of this, while loners factor into a lot of different stories, most loner-centric narratives involve the loner bonding with at least one other character, and who that character is defines a lot of what you can expect from the plot. The absolute most common variant is the kid. This variant probably owes the majority of its popularity to the overwhelming success of the 70s manga Lone Wolf and Cub, which was a story about a wandering assassin trying to avenge his murdered wife. That's the lone wolf part. But he was also traveling around with his baby son. That's the cub bit. Started off pretty episodic, eventually transitioned into a more linear storyline focusing on the whole vengeance thing. The story mostly centers on the strange dynamic between father and son and how they're walking the road to hell together, giving up their humanity to pursue vengeance. In fact, the assassin is frequently called out for exposing his toddler to all this horrifying vengeance and stuff. And while there's a lot of samurai honor going on, those characters do make a good point that this is a pretty rough thing to put a kid through. But the stories this format inspired don't tend to focus on that part. Instead, the gruff adult loner usually adopts the kid in question or otherwise actively chooses to take care of them. Though, sometimes they don't really have a choice in the matter, and instead of this being framed as a supremely uncool thing to do to a kid, this is used to soften the loner character as we see someone who's probably been single-mindedly pursuing some lonery goal sacrifice a lot of those priorities to take care of someone who, for the most part, can't take care of themselves. Usually this story format also lets us see the kid gradually grow up, become more self-reliant, compliant and start taking care of the loner in their own way. The kid helps us sympathize with the loner because it shows us how this tough badass deals with someone who's largely powerless. There's a form of character development called what you are in the dark, where a character is given the opportunity to do something morally dubious or questionable in a context where nobody will know or hold it against them, aka in the dark. What the character chooses to do in this situation reveals who they really are underneath any pretenses or social expectations. Usually in this context, heroes reveal themselves to be, well, fundamentally heroic. They do the selfless good thing because even if no one else would know, they would know. When a gruff badass loner runs into a kid who needs help and opts to help them, that's a minor version of what you are in the dark, showing us that this character might outwardly project an image of being totally in it for themselves, but in the dark, they're actually a good person and will go out of their way to help the helpless. The Mandalorian is pretty tropey, so unsurprisingly, it plays this very straight. Our loner protagonist is very practically minded and ruthlessly efficient and could have turned Baby Yoda in for the bounty and nobody would have held it against him. But instead, he goes back for him and ends up on the run from basically everybody trying to keep the kid safe. The easiest way to add depth to a gruff, quiet loner badass is to chuck a kid at them and watch the parenting take over. In fact, this what you are in the dark thing is kind of a major component of loner character development. I'll talk more about this later. This is also usually how they play the dynamic between Wolverine and his clone slash daughter X-23, though she's a little more self-sufficient than the average tag-along kid on account of being 97.8% Wolverine. On the other end of the tag-along morality character spectrum is, perhaps unsurprisingly, the mentor. Plenty of loners have a parent, teacher, or guardian rattling around somewhere who serves a guiding role in the loner's journey, helping them out with their problems, giving them the next plot point to deal with, etc. Unlike the kid, the mentor is more likely to dip in and out of the story than be a regular companion. This is pretty common in episodic narratives where they maybe don't want to keep the supporting cast too static. The loner mentor is usually used to provide insight into the loner's backstory, which is otherwise not usually very relevant to the story, especially for lone wanderers and lone travelers who drift in and out of other people's stories and tend to work best if their own past is a bit of a black box. A loner's mentor usually knew the loner before they became the character we recognize, and thus will give us some insight into who this character used to be before they settled into who they are now. You can also get mentors who didn't know the loner before the story started. Those guys tend to fill more generic mentory roles, and one of the most common companions for a loner character is another loner. This just makes sense. There's only so many places to be alone in, and eventually the odds are good that you'll run into somebody else trying to be alone in the same place. These loners might initially have a bit of a scuffle, but they'll usually end up getting along alright, and will either start actively traveling together, or will just run into each other whenever the plot needs a little more character spice. This other loner also frequently has a totally different personal agenda that occasionally overlaps with or clashes with the protagonists. They might also be a little more antagonistic, like a bounty hunter or mercenary or something, so while they generally get along with the loner hero, they still have reasons to clash. Sometimes groups of loners end up sticking together, all pretending like they're totally cool, badass loners who don't need nobody, none of them apparently noticing the irony. There's also the catch-all category of the tag-along, which encompasses all the various miscellaneous characters who see a loner doing their loner thing and decides to join the party, usually with almost no input from the loner. These characters normally exist to fill the important role of character foil. Whatever core traits the loner has, the tag-along will highlight by having the opposite trait. The silent, brooding loner will have a chipper, talkative tag-along, the well-traveled, experienced loner will have a naive, inexperienced tag-along, the chill paragon loner will have a more worldly tag-along, etc. Tag-alongs, like all character foils, work best when they play off the hero in an interesting way, usually by contrasting with them. Of course, it can be a bit tricky to explain why exactly this loner is willing to humor the tag-along and keep them around. Explanations can vary a lot. Doctor Who gives us a different set of explanations with every doctor for why they travel with companions. Usually it's because they're lonely, although in the case of the 11th Doctor, it's specifically so they can re-experience the wonders of the universe all over again by showing them to someone who's never seen it, which is pretty creative. In other cases, it's more like the tag-along is the extrovert who spotted the loner introvert and decided to adopt them, and the loner isn't about to turn down an active social life when it falls out of the sky in front of them. And in some cases, the loner and the tag-along get along because at least one of them is in love with the other. Although if you ask the fans, that is what happens every time. Now, the final supporting character in the loner's arc is the innocent. Not a companion or tag-along, this character or set of characters is a living inciting incident. Something terrible has happened, is happening, or is going to happen to the innocent, and the loner, who was probably just passing through on their way to somewhere else, is drawn to assist these poor unfortunate souls because they're just so dang undeserving of this plot shenaniganery. The innocent will sometimes join the loner after their intro story and become a tag-along, but more commonly the innocent is just a member of the one-shot cast for an episode of an anthology series and we're unlikely to see them again. This character, like the kid, shows us who the loner is in the dark. The loner has the option to move on and ignore them, and then instead they go out of their way to help them because the innocent is just so gosh darn innocent. However, the innocent isn't always lovable or even particularly likable. Sometimes loners will end up dealing with a cast of innocent bystanders who somehow manage to be thoroughly unlikable, possibly due to willful ignorance, ineptitude, and unwillingness to actually do anything about the antagonistic threat for themselves, or otherwise just coming across as generally unpleasant. This is actually more effective for the what you are in the dark factor, since not only is the loner doing something good by helping these innocent bystanders, they're doing something good even though the people they're helping kinda suck. That's impressive. Even loners with active support structures will usually spend a decent amount of time alone, wandering off to do solo adventures, training montages, just getting in some me time, etc. And when the character's alone, they get that what you are in the dark factor, since they aren't being seen or judged by their friends and allies. In many ways, a loner protagonist Lucas demonstrates their true, fundamental self to the audience more often than almost any other character archetype. Unfortunately, this leads to writing pitfall number one. The loner's true self needs to be actually interesting and compelling. A character doesn't need to be sociable to be interesting to watch. A loner dealing with an ensemble cast can be fun just because their dynamics are interesting, or the loner is working as a foil for the other, less lonery protagonists. But when the loner is on their own, the audience needs to be invested in them individually, and it's harder to sell an audience on a single character. This is why a lot of loners are almost non-entities or black boxes, especially the lone wanderer archetype who frequently doesn't even have a name. Instead of trying to sell us on them as a person, these stories mostly focus on how they engage with new situations and problems. Now, this does let us get a feel for their personality over time, but on some level it's still kind of impersonal. We know how they react to situations, but that doesn't automatically tell us who they are. And we don't start off invested in them or their struggle, because without other characters to play off of, we don't really know them. Now, this can be a feature, not a bug. Like the thing with the lone wanderer, sometimes the mystery inherent in the loner is actually a selling point of the narrative. But if the audience is supposed to be invested in the loner from minute one, the story needs to do some work to get us attached. For instance, Samurai Jack is an episodic series where every episode has a different setting and story, but the pilot gets us invested in the main character by showing us his entire origin, from childhood to adulthood, explaining why and how he's in the situation he's in, and establishing his goal for the series. Then, in case we miss the pilot, every episode begins with a handy narration and jingle establishing the premise of the series all over again. It doesn't get us as invested in Jack as the pilot did, but it lays out the basic context and tells us who our protagonist is and what he wants. But if you're trying to actually sell us on the loner's character, the story needs to actually let us see what the character is, and that usually means we need to see them interacting with other characters. And here's where we hit pitfall number two, maintaining that loner mystique while throwing a bunch of characters at them. While we've already established that loners don't need to be actually alone to still qualify as loners, if they're too sociable, they risk losing that loner vibe. In fact, if they lose the loner vibe without losing the associated antisocial tendencies, they can stop feeling like a loner and just start feeling like a jerk. If the loner spends all their time around other people and also complains nonstop about having to be around those people, we don't think they're a cool loner who's only in company coincidentally, we think they're an asshole who's bringing down the mood. A loner who picks up a friend group or a support structure but acts totally uncool or unappreciative of them comes across as a bad friend, and the audience can end up wishing they'd just leave and be alone like they say they want. Now again, this isn't necessarily a bug. This can be a feature as long as it's actually addressed in story. A loner who picks up a social circle is liable to undergo at least a little character development, mostly focusing on learning to get along with and appreciate their new posse, even if they're still a loner at heart. Again, this is very popular with Lancers. So a loner who joins a group might end up needing to actually confront how much they've changed if they're still trying to go at 100% alone when that's just not how it works for them anymore. Loners in groups might still peel off for solo adventures or alone time, but they generally need to accept that they're in the group now, not just coincidentally in the same room most of the time. Loners are a lot like cats, honestly. No, it's not like I like you or anything, I'm just gonna make sure I'm always within 20 feet of you, staring at the opposite wall. And, just like cats, if loners get too aggressive in the I want to be alone direction, they can end up driving off those new friends and then regretting it. It's a hard balance to strike. You want to show off the loner's character, so you want to give them plenty of characters to play off of, but you don't want to make them so social that you can't justify calling them a loner anymore. Plenty of loners strike this balance by having loose ensemble casts of supporting characters to play off of without getting pinned down in any one friend group, but if you give a loner an actual team, you gotta figure out how to keep them sufficiently lonery in that context without making them such a cranky downer that the audience questions why the rest of the team even puts up with them. One really good example that handled this well is Netflix's Castlevania. Of the main trio of characters, both Trevor Belmont and Alucard are loners in their own way. One, the last survivor of a disgraced clan of vampire hunters, the other Dracula's son. It's not too surprising they'd have loner written all over them. Although despite their differences, on some level they're actually quite similar, both isolated through circumstance and not particularly happy about it, but fundamentally heroic and determined to help people even if those people kinda suck. And possibly because they're so similar, they kinda really don't get along. Trevor's actively an abrasive jerk, while Alucard is calmer but significantly more sheltered and socially inept on account of being Dracula's kid. But the story completely sells us on why they're working together and how well they play off each other. And most importantly, the third member of the trio, Sypha, really ties it together by reacting to both of them in a very plausible human way. She thinks they're both assholes, but she's also very practically minded and fundamentally quite chipper, and she likes both of them well enough, and fundamentally, they also like each other. They're loners by nature, thrown together by circumstance, clashing and joking and getting to know each other over the course of the show. The banter is top-notch, and it really sells us on this bizarre trio that gets along improbably well without ever glossing over their respective loner character quirks or feeling like they're getting along too well. But the question, why do these guys put up with the loner, is always something to keep in mind when writing a character like this. If you're writing a story with one protagonist, it's easy to start thinking of them like the center of the universe. But they're not. They're just one person in a much larger story. So it's always important to consider how the supporting characters would actually see this loner based on their actions and personality, because otherwise the loner risks risks drifting into Mary Sue territory. If basically every secondary character seems to see the loner protagonist the same way the writer apparently does, like, for instance, as a loose cannon who don't play by no rules but gets the job done anyway, or an improbably sexy middle-aged man who no female deuteragonist can resist, or just the coolest, you guys, he's so amazing! You get the feeling that this character isn't really being developed, they're just being fawned over. And if a loner is frankly acting like a jerk to their perfectly inoffensive supporting cast, we expect at least some of the characters to notice and potentially call them out. And if they don't, we might suspect the writer is giving their favorite characters special permission to run roughshod over the rest of the cast, like a gym coach playing favorites with a football team. The more varied the secondary characters are, and the more diverse their reactions to the loner, the more perspectives we'll have on our loner protagonist. And the more perspectives we have, the more deeply we'll understand them. And since a story with a loner protagonist is in large part carried by the strength of that character alone, you want your audience to understand them on a very deep level. Let them play off a variety of people, places, and things in a variety of different ways, and we'll get to know them very nicely. So, yeah. And thanks again to World Anvil for sponsoring this video. As you probably know by now, World Anvil is a browser-based world-building software designed to make it simple and easy to keep track of your world and all the wonderful stuff in it. It's got all the old favorites, like plot and story timelines, interactive world maps, family trees, and custom wikis for major characters and events, plus a fully customizable calendar with tools for holidays, lunar cycles, and more. They also recently added a major writer's update, integrating a word processor with a Scrivener-like layout with easy access to all your world-building. So now you don't need to jump between your writing software and World Anvil to keep everything straight while you write. This December, World Anvil is also running World Ember, their big world-building competition. The challenge is to write 10,000 words of new world-building content through December, and there's plenty of prizes for exemplary work. Check out the link in the description for more details, and if you're interested in a Master or Grandmaster membership with extra bells and whistles, you can get 20% off with the promo code OverlySarcastic.